United States v. Bishop.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Jones from Madison. I represent DeAndre Bishop, the appellant. When I prepared this brief, I distinctly remember thinking I better get this right because I'm not sure I can get everything I need to say and communicate to the Court under a Begay argument in 10 minutes. But since then, we have the Smith case, which I think makes short work for Your Honors as far as how reckless endangerment applies to a career offender. And I think it makes short work of it in the language that's in that opinion, which states, accordingly, we agree with the Second Circuit that crimes requiring only a mens rea of recklessness cannot be considered violent felonies under the residual clause. And in that case, it was the armed career criminal. The position that the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Western District of Wisconsin is taking is really no secret in that as well. Our statute in Wisconsin is much different than the Indiana one, and that's why it's behavior that goes beyond recklessness. And that's how I think the position they're taking to deal with this Smith case as it relates to the Wisconsin statute. But I can respond. I don't have to wait for the rebuttal to respond to that. I'm in anticipation of that argument. I disagree. Just because the Wisconsin statute indicates that someone has to commit criminal recklessness with an awareness of the risk versus in the Indiana statute, which requires unjustifiable disregard of harm, I think that's really straining to find some kind of difference between Indiana and Wisconsin. In order to disregard a harm, I would imagine you need to be aware of it. And so it really is implied in both these statutes. I don't think that convicting someone of criminal recklessness, it basically goes without saying, even though it does specifically in the Wisconsin statute, that one would have to know about the danger that they're putting others in order to be convicted of the crime.
Now, your position does depend, I think, on this Court's continuing to follow what we've called the categorical approach to these crimes, simply looking at the elements of the crime.
I would agree.
We have not been looking, obviously, at all of the underlying facts in any cases, and in the statutes that have been divisible, we look to a very narrow set of additional material.
I agree. I am just looking at the statute itself, looking at the facts.
So what would happen if we did look, say, to the charging papers or some of the materials that we have on occasion consulted?
In this specific case?
Well,
you would find that, you would create an Apprendi problem. You would see what was alleged and that he pled guilty to violating the statute, but there you would not find any specific
admission, not
in his case.
So we would be left functionally with the statute.
Correct.
But that could come about, though, in the government setting forth or the state setting forth what the conduct was, even though he was pleading to what he pled here, right? It could happen.
It could, sure. I've had sentencings where some judges go further into, tell me exactly in your words what you did. I typically counsel my clients to, keep it short in responding to that. But, sure, the record could, someone at a plea could admit to that. You of course, would have problems, I think, if someone went to trial and were convicted. I don't know that a jury would ever state these are the facts that we find happen. So, but at a plea, sure, that could happen. As I say, I think that the Smith case makes short work of it. I don't know that I need the full 10 minutes at this time. I do have other side arguments that I make regarding the court addressing an error that the court made, and I would just stand by that argument that I have in the brief.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Reinhart?
Good morning. David Reinhart for the United States from the Western District of Wisconsin. We are very familiar with this court's decision in Smith that all crimes with a mens rea of recklessness are not violent felonies. We disagree with Smith's blanket approach. It's our position that you have to look at these statutes separately and individually, because here in this particular case, the Wisconsin definition of recklessness requires a higher degree of intent than the Indiana statute in Smith. The Wisconsin definition requires that the actor be aware of the risk.
But that's quite common, and actually the Indiana code also requires being aware of a high probability of the risk. And I'm finding it somewhat useful to go back to Begay itself. I mean, that's, of course, what launched this never-ending series of cases, trying to figure out each of these statutes. And in Begay, the person gets into the, you know, he's drunk and he gets into the car and he's being reckless with respect to that. Now, of course, if you'd ask somebody, you know, are you being reckless about the consequences? Certainly, yes. But the court says that's not enough. And, you know, if you think of the model penal code, if you think of all sorts of things, there's a line between purposeful and reckless behavior. And this court said in Smith, that's something that we can comprehend. I mean, that's where we think the Supreme Court wanted it, given the examples that the court itself gave in Begay.
Well, our position regarding that is this awareness element is a higher degree of risk. And when you look at the example,
why does it say that, though? I don't see the difference. I'm looking at in your supplemental letter, even the language of the Indiana Code and the language of the Wisconsin Code, and I don't see that you are any more or less reckless because you're aware that there's some risk.
I guess we try to analogize
this.
There's
no purpose. In other words, you may be aware of a risk. You know, maybe you like riding motorcycles without a helmet, and you're being reckless. You're aware if you fall off, it's going to crush your brains out, but you do it anyway. That's reckless behavior.
Under the Wisconsin definition, the actor also has to create such a risk. So there is a purposeful a portion of that, and we think that awareness really does fall under purposeful conduct in Begay. To go back to your...
Well, let me read the Indiana Code, though. A person engages in conduct recklessly if he engages in the conduct in plain, conscious, and unjustifiable disregard of harm that might result. Conscious disregard? I bet you'd be standing here making exactly the same argument based on that if Smith hadn't been decided.
And we realize that there, you know, may be a fine line as to defining these particular offenses. But I guess I would go back to the examples in Begay where they talk about, I think, reckless tampering and reckless polluting, and they conclude that those are not violent felonies. I think when you look at...
Where there's a risk of death in the consumer product tampering, that's a pretty significant risk.
I think, though, when you look at those particular offenses, and you look at the language in Begay, that second degree endangering safety involves this type of offender who may go out and likely pick up a gun and fire a gun or engage in career offender behavior. I don't know if those examples in Begay, you're going to find when you look through a career offender's background, the reckless tampering of goods or the reckless polluting. I guess that's where we draw a distinction when you're talking about this crime as opposed to some of the crimes set forth in Begay. But I guess on top of that particular argument, this case is a plain air case. And the standard of review is plain air, and it's our position that the issue is debatable. And the defendant, therefore, under a plain air standard of review cannot prevail. If there aren't any further questions, since he only addressed the Begay argument, I'll sit down.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jones, do you have anything else?
Just briefly, counsel brought up the examples that were in the Begay and case, particularly the tampering case, And that also involves an extreme indifference to such risk, it says right in the statute. And just as so that really cuts against their argument that, well, because the Wisconsin statute indicates some awareness. I think every statute that is referenced, the federal one with the tampering, the Indiana one, and the Wisconsin one, all either impliedly, but I think really expressly if you read into it, state the person being convicted had to have known they were creating that risk. So, again, I think it's a bit of a strain. In the end, really, the court is trying to assess who this person is and are they deserving of the enhancement, the severe enhancement that armed career criminal or, in this case, a career offender, gets. And in trying to do that, it really assess, have they acted intentionally very badly in the past, or have they acted at more a heightened level of negligence that's called recklessness? And I think that distinction, and if you try to separate the Wisconsin statute with the Indiana one and address it in that way, you're going to create some kind of disparity that really would be unfair. I think if Mr. Smith had committed the exact same behavior in Wisconsin, this is the statute he would have ended up on. And to say, well, in Wisconsin and Indiana, you know, in one case that counts as a career offender, and in Wisconsin it does, I think would also create that bit of a problem as well.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.